Go Loud.
Grey's headline said they should be treated like Connolly. I thought they were advocating
James Connolly
for tying them to the chair and shooting them by fire.
That was in the first draft.
Barbie is for me to cast judgment on the Brits. But what I think is...
Near be to you to cast judgment on the Brits. It's never stop. And as a like total ledge bag, Ko Samui sending it on your right and then Enoch Burke on your left. And you're the average.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Few Scoops with me, journalist Aoife Muir, and you, Colm O'Regan. Good morning, Colm.
Good morning from Cork, Aoife.
The People's Republic, the real capital.
That's right. The official designation hasn't happened yet, but we're working on it.
I'm sure you as well. Will we get started?
Let's do it.
Congratulations are in order for one of the richest men in the world because Jeff Bezos, the cartoon villain of 2025, got married at the weekend. It appears very much that tacky is back. I'm not against it. I think tacky gets a bad rap. So Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon and huge climate pirate, married the former journalist Lauren Sanchez at the weekend in a star-studded ceremony in Venice. So Lauren Sanchez, just to give people a rundown, I've seen a lot of very sexist commentary about Lauren Sanchez. So she is a journalist. She is also a helicopter pilot, I read it this weekend. They're around the same age. He's around 5 years older than her. He was previously married to a woman called Mackenzie, who gave him actually some startup money to start Amazon, and then he left her. And now he is married to Lauren Sanchez. She was previously attached and has children with an NFL player. She was a sports journalist for Fox. She does not need Jeff Bezos' money. She's worth about $30 million herself, but I'm sure it's nice to spend someone else's money. So I think the reason why this wedding has been so widely publicized is not only was it a really revolting display of wealth, but it actually became a real hindrance for the location. So the two got married in Venice, the Italian city in which the people who live there have asked people to stop coming because it's sinking into the sea. Large parts of the city were closed off so that the people who actually lived there were really discommoded. There was, you know, videos of police in the town asking people for ID so they could enter their own houses.
Really. Were these police in gondolas as well? Like, were
no, they were
trying to sneak up the canals.
They were on foot. But they actually had to move the ceremony because there were so many protests across Venice against the wedding and against Bezos himself.
It's every bride's worst nightmare in the lead up to a wedding, the idea that there would be protests involving enormous inflatable crocodiles in the canals. Like, it's, you know, it's on your list of things you don't want to happen. You know, photographer not turning up, inflatable crocodiles clogging up the waterways on the way. So, I mean, they're just like us, really. They go through the same
stuff. Yeah, you're arguing with your mammy about seats for your cousins that you haven't spoken to in years. And also someone's made a mannequin of your future husband and it's floating down the canal in Venice. Just to add,
I didn't hear about the mannequin. They were going to do a mannequin as well?
Oh, no, they didn't. They did a mannequin. So they made this little mannequin of Jeff Bezos and he floated down the Venetian canals on like a door, like Leo DiCaprio's character in Titanic. Like, he was on like a door and there was a message attached to it. It was all very sweet. No, it's really easy to make a mannequin or like a likeness of Jeff Bezos because he's so bald and already kind of looks like a mannequin.
You know, we don't want to be anarchist cookbooking this now by publishing details on how to make a mannequin of Jeff Bezos. Like, we don't want to radicalize people.
Yeah. So all the internet chit chat about this wedding has been so hilarious because this wedding was the tackiest thing. And I've seen a lot of tacky in my life. I'm not against it. I feel like it's quite classist at times. This was 200 people, celebrities, that there is just no possible way that these people know. So like Oprah Winfrey, Gayle King, Oprah's friend who went to space, Sydney Sweeney, gorgeous actress, have no idea how she knows Jeff Bezos. Climate hypocrite, Leonardo DiCaprio arrived. I read somewhere that 96 private jets flew into Venice for this wedding. So I'm not as big on climate as you are, Calm. So I'm going to let you just explain to the listeners why Jeff Bezos and Amazon specifically are so hated when it comes to climate and people who want to look after the environment.
Well, I mean, where do you start? And I just know as soon as we say this, there'll be an Amazon ad pop up in the middle of the podcast. But anyway, we can't control the world. Focusing on Jeff Bezos, like there's, you know, donating to charity, you know, in aid of renewable energy and all this kind of thing. But even just focusing on the wedding, the carbon footprint has, the estimates range from, Hello Magazine asked ChatGPT just to work out the climate.
Journalism, everybody.
Exactly. Listen, it's just to get over that blank page syndrome. And they worked out about 1,000 tons, which is 17 and a half times the average wedding, which actually I thought would be more than that.
Yeah,
and then
so did
there
I.
was...
A lot of fairy lights at weddings now.
Yes, that's the thing. I mean, I always think that Christmas lights are giving dads my age conniptions, just watching them constantly on around the place. But there's another guy, he was on LinkedIn, and a LinkedIn post by a sociologist and economist called Gianluca Grimalda. He reckoned that the, if he added it up, it was 10,000 tons of carbon. And some other stat says that for every 4,000 tons of carbon, somebody dies of heat-related illnesses because of the warming. So that basically, he was making the connection that Jeff Bezos' wedding, he says, could have killed 2.3 people. Right? So,
and that's like much, much higher than a normal Irish wedding.
Yeah,
you know.
But having said that, they did save money on the invitation by making it tacky. They may have cut the carbon footprint of it.
Wedding invitation. We are going to, for our video clips, we'll put up the photo of the invitation. I am not telling our listeners a word of a lie when I tell you I could have made this wedding invitation on Microsoft Word. It is the most clip art looking bullshit I have ever seen in my life.
Well, I think they've saved the carbon cost. This clearly isn't generated by AI. Like,
no.
It's like they got Clip It back from the archive and it said, it looks like you're trying to design a wedding invitation for a billionaire who's confused on what visual style to use. And it's got that beautiful italic typeface, maybe Lucida handwriting that we've all used for our sixth-year graduation mass. It looks like a sixth-year graduation mass booklet.
That's exactly what it looks like. There's wee butterflies on it. Oh, it's absolutely horrendous. But the tackiness doesn't end there. The Kardashians, of course, were in attendance. But one of my favourite things about this wedding was that famous opera singer Andrea Bocelli, the revered Italian tenor who has performed at Kim and Kourtney Kardashian's wedding, right? He decided he wasn't doing Jeff Bezos. So instead, they got his son, Matteo, to sing Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis Presley instead. I love the feeling, now this probably isn't accurate, that Andrea Bocelli was like, do you know what? This one I'm going to send out, but I'll send Junior along. He can do it.
Also, he was looking at the invitation and thinking, I don't know if I'm going to get paid much for this. I think we're losing sight of what's the bigger issue here, which is the table plan. Like, how do you work out who to sit next to who at a wedding of that magnitude? And I know you've probably got more info deep diving on this, but I'd love the idea that at some point in the table planning, they said about one guest, do you know what? We'll put them there. Sure, they'll talk to anyone, right? Because that's who you need. That's who you need at a wedding, at a table where there isn't a theme linking people. Because we've all been that person. You sat down at a wedding table and you're going, what's the theme here? Why am I here? And then you look to your right and there's a like total ledge bag, Koh Samui, sending it on your right. And then Enoch Burke on your left. And you're the average. Like, you're the glue linking those two worlds. So I love the idea that they had that.
Yeah.
And I also love the idea of one Irish guest being invited and saying, oh, they're having it in Venice. They must think we're made of money. You know, I want, in order to reach for something like this, we need to make it back to the familiar.
Yeah, I think as well that Irish guest being like, I suppose you make a holiday of it if you do. I just love the thought.
Well, we went to Lake Garda afterwards. It was grand. Yeah.
I just love the thought of being like, oh, who are we going to sit next to? Bill Gates, because he'll be shitting on.
Yeah.
And Dolce and Cabana were the people who dressed Lauren Sanchez. They made her a gown of 180 silk chiffon covered priest buttons dot in the front. Now, let me tell you.
What's a priest button?
It's like a little material button. I don't know how to describe it. You know the buttons that have material over them on like a tuxedo? They're very small.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. So like, could you picture a normal Irish bride after like quite a lot of lady petrol?
Yeah.
Like, you're about 15 Proseccos down and you're trying to get under your bed and there's 180 silk chiffon covered buttons. I would be tearing the thing off myself. Terrible.
And not with passion, just free.
Not with passion. So yeah, I think I've seen a lot of misogynistic takes about this. I don't really have much thought about Lauren Sanchez. She's got her own
now,
money.
Why would you have misogynistic takes about this? Why would you eat
You don't need to go there.
When you've got a... You've got a feast. Why go to the afters of this wedding, the banter, when you've got this Italian feast in front of you of things to talk about?
Things,
yeah, there's no need for misogyny.
All of this is disgusting enough. You don't need to go after Lauren Sanchez as a bimbo. It's quite well reported. She's not a bimbo. She doesn't need his money. She's not a lot younger than him. You know, in the grand scheme of things, their wedding was revolting, but not because of her.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio is saying to him, like, 5-year age gap. Bro, what are you doing?
Imagine, you know, Jeff Bezos being like the model, being like, oh, 6 years, you know, he's only 6 years older than her. Like, imagine Jeff like nudging Leo at the wedding, being like, mate, come on. They remember 9/11.
Yeah.
They read books. Come on. Like, if Jeff Bezos is your model for normal relationships, I think there's a problem. But also Leonardo DiCaprio claims to care about the climate and then attends such ceremonies.
One last thing is the PA. You could see the guest list. Because she had it under her arm. So she had this like spreadsheet printout. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't done in the same visual style as the invitation. So it didn't have any clip art on it. But you could see like no show was marked against some of them. So, I mean, that gives anyone the horrors, clutching any document in public about people being able to see it. Or indeed using a Perspex speaking platform. If you have the page turned over, people can read underneath. So just this is just my public service announcement. If you are clutching secure material, just make sure that it can't be seen from a distance or indeed through a Perspex.
I also have a story
podium.
About this. There was an election a number of years ago and a very famous Irish politician was being photographed voting, and this very prominent and beloved politician held up his ballot paper to the cameras before putting it in the box. And because the cameras now are so high tech and the zoom is so sharp, that a photographer I know, when he was, you know, photoshopping and fixing the image, was able to zoom in and he could see who this very popular and beloved politician was voting for. So just a note for any of the politicians listening to this, do not hold your piece of paper up. It is not thick enough and you might be able to see who you voted for. So there you are.
And one last thing. I remember an independent candidate in my constituency got like 13 votes or something in an election, which meant they knew that members of their family hadn't voted for them.
Yeah.
So don't assume somebody else in the family is going to vote for them. Just do it just to be on the safe side. Otherwise, you're all under suspicion.
Yeah. Like, my ma would definitely vote for me, but I don't even know she'd be sure what she's voting for. She's just like, oh, fair play to your Aoife. That would be the kind of vibe.
Whatever she's into.
Whatever she wants herself. Over the weekend, police in the north announced that they're investigating the murder of a pregnant woman in County Down. 27-year-old Sarah Montgomery was found in a ground floor flat, her flat, in Donaghadee on Saturday afternoon. Sarah had two children and she was pregnant. Police currently are questioning a 28-year-old man, and in the last day they have arrested a 42-year-old woman in Belfast on suspicion of assisting an offender. This is a live case, so we don't know the details, and I don't want to talk any further about it, not to prejudice anything that may or may not happen. We know that homicide is the number one cause of death of pregnant women in the US. Here, we know that in the North, or Northern Ireland, as some people call it, is the most dangerous place in Europe to be a woman. It is tied with Romania. Sarah was the 27th woman to be killed in her home since 2020. And we could talk about this every couple of months. I feel like we have been talking about this every month with our friends and families. And I think a lot of people do feel helpless. We just see these women being killed and these stats keep going up and we don't know where to start.
The very minimum we should do is not turn away and regard it as such an intractable problem that we can do nothing. And it's just like always with us. Mm. That we have agency as people, but to ignore it is to do less than nothing.
Okay, it feels like every week we are talking about Palestine and Gaza, and rightly so. But this, again, we are talking about how the Brits are never not at it. So Palestine Action, a protest group, are now before the High Courts on Friday to try and prevent a banning order against them for coming into effect. So the British government laid an order before Parliament on Monday that would prescribe Palestine Action as a terrorist organisation, which would mean being a member or supporting Palestine Action would be a criminal offence carrying a maximum sentence of 14 years in jail. What, did you ask, have Palestine Action done? Who have they killed? What letter bombs have they sent? None. Palestine Action is a protest group who have been around for over a decade, but apparently, according to Keir Starmer's Labour government, they have taken it too far, because Palestine Action, a Palestine support group who try and do different levels of protest in order to bring attention to the genocide in Gaza, spray painted some pro-Palestine, anti-Israel messages at an RAF base. And Yvette Cooper, the Secretary of State, said, enough. So alongside Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, the UVF, the INLA, the IRA, and the Red Hand Commando.
It sounds like an episode of Reeling in the Years there, hearing all those names back again.
Palestine Action, the Graffiti Bandits, could now become labelled terrorists. Yvette Cooper, the Home Secretary, said, there had been a long, and this is a quote, a long history of unacceptable criminal damage committed by Palestine Action. I'd like to point out to everyone, the criminal damage is not terrorism. However,
so I would have put them in the same bracket as Extinction Rebellion. In terms of disruption, graffiti, maybe breaking into things, or anti-nuclear protesters who have broken
very
into
similar army
installations and camps. What's going on? Is it like, looking into the human emotional, you know, the way governments are so emotional reaction, are they embarrassed by the ease at which they broke into an RAF? Is it an RAF base they broke into?
Yeah, it's not the first time it's been done, but this is the first time that people have been called terrorists, notwithstanding the fact that it's to do with Gaza. The big issue the Palestine Action are really concerned about is the order which is put before Parliament is not just seeking to ban Palestine Action, but to ban three groups. The others being the Maniacs Murder Cult.
Right.
Sorry. I know. So
they played the Death Stage at Glastonbury.
Yeah,
did they?
Yeah, they used to do the point. So they have been accused of planning and soliciting a mass casualty attack in New York. And the other group is the Russian Imperial Movement, which Washington says provided paramilitary-style training to white supremacists and neo-Nazis in Europe. Palestine Action say this is a cynical attempt to have them banned because MPs will quite naturally want to ban the Maniac Murder Cult and the Russian Imperial Movement. And so in one fell swoop, all three could be labelled terrorists, despite the fact that Palestine Action are not plotting to murder anyone, are not aligned with Nazis, and have not ever injured anyone in their protests. They had a short hearing on Monday, and now they will have another one on Friday where they can apply for an interim order. Everyone, NGO, human rights lawyers have all said that this is the first attempt in British history to criminalise political protest as terrorism, and it mimics many authoritarian regimes around the world who have used counter-terrorism to crush dissent. It sets an extremely dangerous precedent with repressive impacts right across the Palestine movement. That
and what's
is,
going on in the UK in the sense that are people sleepwalking into some serious shit in terms of repression? Because there was another, wasn't there another bill last year that the people in Extinction Rebellion got some pretty hefty sentences.
Jail sentences.
And I thought, and then there wasn't there legislation brought in last year on protests as distinct from proscribing organizations? Like, why is this kind of happening in a gentle, sloped way without anyone talking about it in, to the same extent that they're worried about democracy in the United States?
You know, far be it for me to cast judgment on the Brits, but what I think, my analysis of it is...
Near be to you to cast judgment on the Brits, I would say, Aoife. Never stop, really.
Yeah, it's made my life work out of it. For me, I think since Brexit, obviously, English, and I say English very specifically because I don't believe the same goes for Wales and Scotland, but English society has regressed. In a time, I think when you look at, say, Ireland or Portugal or any other kind of centrist, centre-right countries in Europe that are becoming more open, more diverse, more progressive, England has gone down this real little Englander mindset, and it has infected everything since Brexit. We've seen that with the rise of Reform and Nigel Farage in the Parliament, and we've seen, although there is a Labour government, this isn't really a Labour government in terms of a left-wing government. You know, Keir Starmer's government are the government that are trying to prescribe Palestine action. Keir Starmer's government are the government that are standing in the way of inquiry into the murder of Sean Brown. These are things we would have usually associated with conservative governments, but I think England has slid so far down this slope of right-wing reactionary government that we are now seeing what we would have considered perhaps a centre-left government at one point now just being very, very, not even centre-right, right-wing. Keir Starmer, you know, has been a disappointment, but only to people who weren't really paying attention. Keir Starmer has never really been in his public life as a politician left-wing. And I feel like there is, with the Labour government, they were always criticised by the Conservatives and the right wing as being these bleeding heart lefties, soft on crime. And I feel like Keir Starmer is so insecure that he's overcorrected. Or maybe that's just who he always was. But I think the Labour Party has overcorrected. And now they are sleepwalking into this soft fascism that will see artists and protests completely criminalised. And it's not obviously, you know, if this was happening in America, we would say, yeah, this sounds about right. But I think the reason it's so maybe jarring in England is because it's under a Labour government. I think this isn't the last we're going to see of this. I think there's something about, and you see this sometimes with Sinn Féin as well, I think Labour are trying to be all things to all people, which means you end up being nothing to nobody. And I think they're trying to be left-wing when it suits them, when they're talking about, you know, social welfare, etc. And then I'm trying to implement massive welfare cuts, criminalise protest, talking about, you know, sending aid to Israel rather than Palestine. It's incredibly depressing. They're on a very slippery slope in the shadow of Donald Trump. And I think a lot of this is because Donald Trump has moved the Overton window. And these allies of America
and
are
just,
all
just for anybody who doesn't know what the Overton window is, how would you describe it? The window of acceptability.
The window of acceptability has moved now. And I think all these so-called allies of America are following Donald Trump's footsteps because I think what we see as a leader has changed. And I think cracking down on dissent is a first. Now, I also would say, should we even be surprised when you look at what happened to Irish people and people who protested for the hunger strikers and the hitch block and everything else during the 70s and 80s? So I know there'll be people like Bernadette Devlin and other civil rights activists who say, sure, what would you expect from a pig but a grunt? And this, I think, maybe is making such a big splash is because they've never done it to English people before.
Maybe, although maybe the hope that somewhere inside Keir Starmer is that same little boy who was a human rights lawyer who used to defend protesters in these types of cases, maybe 20 years ago. But maybe he'll just stare in the mirror one day and say, what happened to that, Keir? And then there'll be that moment, the music will play and he'll walk through Parliament tearing things up and saying, let them paint, let them graffiti and all will be well. That's what I'm hoping for.
Me too. And staying on our current topic of Palestine, I think it's worth noticing that Haaretz, which is an Israeli newspaper, published on Friday that they had spoken to IDF, serving IDF soldiers, Israeli soldiers, who said that they had been told to implement a shoot to kill policy, and they were killing people in Gaza who were queuing up for aid. So this was, you know, food and medicine that was being handed out, and we saw people corralled into these small spaces, and then soldiers would open fire, and we saw, you know, numerous civilians killed. But instead of the media in England talking about Haaretz and talking about how this unbelievable Israeli journalism has unearthed an Israeli shoot to kill policy against starving people, instead they're talking about Glastonbury. I think it's worth noting at this stage that, according to early reports, during the entire Glastonbury festival, which went over the weekend, around 400 Gazans were killed by Israel. But we now have to talk about Kneecap again and a hip-hop duo called Bob Villain. Calum, do you know who Bob Villain are?
I don't, but I do now thanks to all of this. They shouted some stuff from a stage and it's all we can talk about rather than Gaza.
Yeah, so they're under investigation by Avon and Somerset Police after Glastonbury because they were live streamed on the BBC. The BBC decided not to stream Kneecap's performance and instead decided to stream Bob Villain's performance. I am almost certain that Bob Villain and Kneecap are on the same record company and they share a lot of the same politics. Full disclosure, I have met Bob Villain before in a pub in West Belfast where they seem to fit in quite nicely. They are very, very political. They have talked about Palestine quite a lot. They've talked about, you know, inequality and racism, homophobia, all the rest of it a lot in their raps.
Classic woke nonsense, is it?
Exactly. They were performing live at Glastonbury in which they shouted Free Palestine. They were far from the only band that shouted Free Palestine at Glastonbury. And then the lead singer, they're called the Bobs when they're on stage, Bob One, chanted Death, Death to the IDF. This was live streamed on the BBC. The Daily Mail next day had a headline saying that they had called for the death of Israelis, which to be certain, they did not. They called for death to the IDF. Now they're being investigated by the police. There was a Daily Express headline, an unhinged Daily Express headline, and said that they should be treated like Connolly. I had to double check this. They were talking about someone who was prosecuted for making a racist post last year whose surname was Connolly. I thought they were advocating
James Connolly
for tying them to the chair in the Jeep in Kilmainham jail and shooting
that was
them
in
by
the
fire.
In the first draft, yeah. I mean, you talk about an unhinged Daily Express headline. It's been a while since I've seen a hinged one.
Yeah. They're rarely on the hinge, to be fair. So they are not advocating for tying Bob Villain to a chair and fire and killing them by fire squad like they did to James Connolly, but they are advocating for them to be prosecuted under similar legislation that someone else whose surname was Connolly was prosecuted under last year. They did not call for the death of anyone in particular, but they did, and they have clarified they were calling for the death of what they say is an Israeli war machine who has carried out systematic genocide against the Gazan people. And I think, I know I'm singing to the choir here for a lot of our listeners, but I think a lot of people would say, why are we talking about Bob Villain, who had less than 100,000 followers on Instagram before the weekend, and not talking about the fact that IDF soldiers have admitted that they murdered Palestinians queuing up for aid because they were starving to death?
Well, yeah, the notoriously bleeding heart liberals that are Israeli soldiers openly talking about what they were ordered to do. And again, we spent too long talking about the wrong thing. We fell into the trap, and you know, the attacks on people queuing up for food is a level of awfulness that its purpose is to distract us from previous levels of awfulness. It's having an inuring effect on people, and it there's also no consequences. So all of these things would, even in other wars, lead to other investigations, and it just seems like there isn't, normal rules aren't applying anymore, even within the context of normal rules of war.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to point out as well that Amyl and the Sniffers, I'm sure Calum's a big fan, Amyl and the Sniffers, an Australian band, put out a statement saying that almost every band that they saw mentioned Palestine during their Glastonbury set, including the Queen of Ireland, CMAT, and that there was Palestine flags everywhere. Do not get it twisted in that this is, you know, some niche issue. people are very united in their support for Gaza. And when, and we're back to Keir Starmer, but when governments start censoring art and politics, that is a slippery slope to fascism. We've seen it before. And I think maybe it might be a wee bit different now because Bob Dylan are English. And I think maybe with Kneecap there was a kind of feeling among the English that, you know, it's Irish and it's worse because, you know, they kind of deserve it. But now it's two Englishmen. Now, granted, they're both people of colour, so that might change some people's minds. But I think there's a feeling that, you know, you can't be censoring English art. I think that might change a few minds. But we await to see what happens.
They'll find a way.
Okay, Calm, do you want to do your good news?
So my good news is a nerdy one. So
what's new?
One of the things you saw as one of the things you saw as depressed me was during the Civil War, 103 years ago, actually, give or take in the last couple of days, the rebel forces were holed up in the forecourts and then the Free State forces were firing on them. And it started a fire in the public records office and it burnt hundreds of years of records going back to like the Norman times. And it was always depressing because even you'd watch like Who Do You Think You Are with an Irish person, it would always, they'd go back to 1901 and I'm afraid we don't have anything going back any further than that. And it felt like a big missing hole in our history. And
I don't know that much about it in terms of like a lot of this is from Who Do You Think You Are, but anytime you would watch an episode, they would have to mention the fire in the records office and say, well, we don't know what happened to your great, 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 great granddad because that's lost.
Yeah, they suddenly appeared and then you watch the English version and they're going back to parish registries from Upper Stonkington and it shows that they were once a falconer or something like that. And there's a definite hunger for that because when the 1901 census came out and the 1911 census came out, I just loved searching for stuff. You'd find mad things in there. You'd find like the only man in the country who declared his religion as Mohammedan. And then in the next census, he changed his mind. I think he might have gone insane in the meantime. Or again, the only falconer or somebody who has listed their mother-in-law as insane in the second one, but not in the first one. And just this kind of social history. So in the meantime, it turns out that not everything was destroyed. Sometimes there was copies kept and stuff was might have been duplicated. There might have been records in the UK as well too. So this week, to mark the 103rd anniversary of the burning, this lovely website, which is called, let me see, it's the Virtual Record Treasury of Ireland. There's 200,000 new historical records are now available for free, including 60,000 names from the 19th century census, which were thought to be destroyed.
That's now, amazing.
Look, in order to know what you're looking for, it's kind of hard. Like, obviously, I searched for my own name. There's no Colm O'Regan's in it. Yeah. So what's the point? But it's a lovely project where people are gathering together knowledge that was thought to be lost. And there's loads of people collaborating. You know, there's academics, there's mathematicians, there's tech heads. Some of the records are like they've hand read them and hand reproduced them. It hasn't been like a machine learning kind of scraping it. So I think it's just going to be when all of this stuff starts to get filled in. Now, this is going to be great for Who Do You Think You Are? But also, I'm sure people are going to find out stuff that their ancestors did during the 19th century. You know, letters to Cromwell saying, give me
the soup.
Give me the land. Soup hasn't been invented yet. Yeah. Whatever you're having for soup now in the 17th century. So there's state papers containing 10 million words detailing governance in the turbulent years following the era of Cromwell. There's the Age of Conquest portal containing medieval documentation. Look, this is niche interest, but I think everybody should be interested in this kind of stuff.
I think, you know, a lot of people are going to find out that their great-great-granddad was bullshitting about what he did during the rising.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. During the risings that haven't been documented already. I mean, absolutely. There's going to be bits where there's going to be challenges to wills that look grubby. There's going to be letters to, you know, Vice Regal Lodge saying, my neighbour, if I tell you all about him, can I have his land? I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Oh, but there's going to be a lot of people found out to be grasses. Like they're you're going to find out that your great-great aunt was a tout. That's going to happen for some people.
Yeah, amnesty for touts because there's so many of them. Sure, look, how do we all get through the famine?
Sure, didn't the Brits try and do that?
Yeah, something helped us survive all those years, so we must have been up to something. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to more and more of this because, as I say, when you feel like there's a gap in your country's history, particularly a fire that was started by the actions of your own people on whatever side. We can work that out in 3 hours of another episode. But I don't know, that gives me hope for the future to delve into the ancient wills of the past, because the present, sometimes you just want to run away from it.
Yeah, that's a great story. I actually saw that in the paper this week and thought it seemed really nice. So on that note, we have our good news from listeners. This is so grim, but this is the time we live in. Hi, Finn Callum. Good news of the week. I finally convinced my landlord to buy me a new mattress. It is the bare minimum, people. Yeah. That's lovely. I got my landlord to buy me a new mattress when I moved in as well. Oh, this is a great one. Went home with a guy from work. He's made it extremely awkward ever since. And I've just learned he's moved to England. Great.
Okay.
That's wonderful. Take it from me, anyone who's listening to this, do not ever, ever pull anyone from work. It is not worth it. And some other person said, "Hi, Ethan Calm, expecting a baby. Please don't say my name, as I've only told my husband." Congratulations. Okay. I'm assuming you didn't meet at work, or even if you did, it's all worked out. Well done to the people, you know, creating life and getting new mattresses. They're all very bed, actually.
Yeah, I mean,
they're all very bed centered.
It's not clear if the first one buying a new mattress and the third one are linked. I'm assuming they're two separate cases.
Well done to everyone procreating or practicing procreating or getting new mattresses. That's all for this week from A Few Scoops. We will be back next week. And thank you very much to our lovely producer, Siobhan, who puts up with me and Callum every week. And I always forget to thank her. Callum, anything you want to add?
No, just in case it looks a little different, I'm down in Cork recording this. So this is our first dual location recording. And just to give that Cork view.
Yeah,
and the Cork view
the
is that.
Republic.
Exactly. Yeah, we haven't had elections yet, but I think elections can only complicate things.
Referendum. Okay, thank you.